Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest has spent a lot of time watching movies and television shows, and that's because for the past decade, Peter Chataway's reviews have been posted online or published in print. Peter is one of the participants in Imago's upcoming Meeting God of the Movies Forum, taking place in Toronto on Saturday, September 19th. Peter's on the phone with us from his Vancouver area home office to talk about the movies and the forum. But before we begin our conversation with Peter, let's listen to My Favorite Lie from Carolyn Aaron's Love Was Here first CD.
I'm a caterpillar who will not cocoon, feels like a tomb, I will not die. I am a seed that will not be broken for the flower to open, no, I will not die. I am a pilgrim on a dead end road who refuses to go in a new direction. I am a sucker for my favorite lie, that you don't have to die to live a resurrection. I don't want to die to live a resurrection. I am a creature who prefers my cave to the light of day, cause it's what I know. Sailor who will not leave shore, that could come a storm, the winds could blow. I am a pilgrim on a dead end road who refuses to go in a new direction. I am a sucker for my favorite lie, that you don't have to die to live a resurrection. I don't wanna die to live a resurrection.
And now to our interview with Peter Chataway. Good evening, Peter.
Good evening.
Now, before we talk about the upcoming Meeting God at the Movies Forum, let's give our listeners a chance to know a little bit about you and your interest in movies and that. When did that all start for you? When did your interest in movies begin?
Pretty early. I'm 44 years old now, born in 1970. And in 79, I think, 78 or 79, my dad bought our family's first VCR. This is back when blank videotapes cost $30 each, I think. and he started, taping movies off of TV. So partly so that the kids in the family, like myself, would have good things to watch even when there was nothing on TV. So basically from like the time I was eight or 9 years old, I was already, watching certain movies repeatedly. And as you watch them, you start noticing things about them and you start thinking about how they work. And I started reading about film and I was also of that generation that sort of grew up on Lucasfilm. I was six or seven when Star Wars came out. I was 11 when I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark for the first time, and Raiders of the Lost Ark in particular was kind of perfect for a kid like me, because I was going to church. I was a bit of a Bible geek. I also liked movies, and here was a movie in which the hero was trying to rescue the Ark of the Covenant from the Nazis. And there's even a line in the film where Indiana Jones is trying to explain what the Ark of the Covenant is to a couple of government guys, and at one point, because they don't seem to know what he's talking about, and at one point he says, "Didn't you guys ever go to Sunday school?" And of course, I actually saw the film with my Sunday school class, so that was kind of perfect. And then just as I got older, I got more interested in it and started looking into the history of film. And then eventually I ended up taking a few courses at university. I never took a proper film class, but My major in history was history and religious studies, but I took every film course that a non-major could take, and then I ended up becoming the entertainment editor at the student newspaper, and through that I got access to publicists and press screenings, and I started going to, I suddenly started seeing a lot of movies for free because I was reviewing them for the student newspaper, and then that just
Well, looking at that and looking at that, that whole history, was there any one particular movie that stood out for you that, that you've always gone back to as say a favorite that, that you, you enjoyed? I know you mentioned Raiders of the Lost Ark. Was there any other movie that, that kind of really caught your attention?
Oh, sure. lots of films. You know, by the time I was 20, I sort of settled on three movies that I used to tell people were the movies that you had to see if you wanted to understand me, whatever that meant. And so by the time I was 20, the three movies I had settled on, number one was Lawrence of Arabia, which, you know, I happened to be 18 years old when that movie was restored, and they released the restored version to theaters. And so I was, you know, I just started going to university. We just started dealing with big philosophical issues, and then I go see Lawrence of Arabia, and it's very much interested in questions of freedom and destiny, and can a person make his own fate, or is a person always forced into positions by prevailing social forces, political forces, and so it was very intellectually engaging, but Lawrence of Arabia is also just a beautiful, beautiful film just to watch. And I also got something of the sense that film can give you an experience that that you wouldn't necessarily expect to have just by sitting in a room for a couple of hours. I remember Lawrence of Arabia during the intermissions, there would be people lining up in the theater for drinks because the first half of the movie with all that desert scenery just kind of made you thirsty. And so that was my number one. And I've never officially revised my list, so I guess it still is my official number one. My official number two favorite movie of all time is Purple Rose of Cairo, directed by Woody Allen. And that's a really fascinating film because it takes place in the 30s during the Great Depression. And it's about a movie character who walks off the screen to be with a woman who's in the audience. And so it's a somewhat playful movie that way. But it also gets into issues of the relationship between creators and their creations. The actor who played the character is brought in to try to convince the character to get back on the screen and continue the movie like he's supposed to. And the character says he doesn't want to do what the actor wants him to do, and it gets into interesting stuff like that. And it even explicitly raises the question of God and his relationship to us. And, you know, Woody Allen was going through a period then when he was really thinking about these issues. And it's also very funny. And my number three movie is a highly, highly personal choice. Many people have never even heard of the film, but it's called The Family Way, which is a film from the 1960s. Which deals with a newlywed couple who are living, their honeymoon plans fall through, and so they spend the first days, the first months of their marriage living with the groom's parents, and they find this very awkward, and they're having trouble sort of getting the marriage started, as it were, and along the way we look at sort of family influences. We look at how, like, the movie starts out being about the newlywed couple, and then about halfway through, two-thirds of the way through, our attention shifts a little bit, and we start paying more attention to the groom's parents, and we realize there are things that happened before the groom was even born that are still affecting his life, and he doesn't even know it. And I found that look at family dynamics really interesting. And it's an underappreciated, overlooked film. I happen to like it a lot, so that was one of my top three by the time I was 20. And then gradually I've added a few more films to that list. I love Koyaanisqatsi. And anybody who doesn't know that film probably didn't catch the title just now. The title is a Native American word, K-O-Y-A-A-N-I-S-Q-A-T-S-I, which means life out of balance. And that film has an hour and a half of just images. And there's no dialogue, there's no characters, there's no plot. It's just an hour and 20, 30 minutes of images of nature contrasted with images of modern society. And I find it's a really mesmerizing film to watch. It helps if you like the music of Philip Glass, which I do. I know people who say they would like the film if only it didn't have music by him. But I happen to like his music, and I think it's a good reminder that film, a lot of people say film is about story, and that's not necessarily true. Film is primarily about moving images, and film is primarily about moving images. And certainly we have combined film with drama, and there's an expectation now of that there will be stories with actors and characters and dialogue. But Koyaanisqatsi is a wonderful example, I think, of how film works on a purely, well, not quite purely, but a basically purely visual level. And I say not quite purely because there's music as well. But it works really well just on that level of images and music.
Well, I think what we need to do is take a little break from there at that point. And what we'll do is we'll be right back with our guest, movie reviewer Peter Chataway. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM. Back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Something Out of Nothing, Something Out of Us from Carolyn Aaron's Love Was Here first CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with movie reviewer Peter Chataway. Now, Peter, we're going to look at the fact that you're going to be down in the Toronto area looking at Meeting God at the Movies Forum. What led you to becoming part of this?
Sorry, excuse me. Part of the forum, you mean?
Yes.
They asked me, and I said yes. I think I've met John Franklin once or twice before, several years ago, and I wrote an article for the Imago newsletter several years ago, but I haven't. Interacted with them very often, but you know what I see, I like, and apparently what they see of my stuff, they like, and so they asked me to come and speak, and I said yes.
Well, I know John, and I know he keeps his fingers in a lot of pies and tracks a lot of people and what they're doing. Looking at all of this, so I mean, I'm old enough to remember the days when Christians didn't go to movies. It just wasn't something that you did. Even in the time that you've been reviewing movies and that, how has that whole attitude of Christians in the movies, how has that changed?
Yeah, I can remember when I was a kid, there were lots of debates still even then about whether or not kids should be allowed to see Star Wars or whether kids should be allowed to watch TV. There were certain families that didn't do that. Whereas I never really hear anybody talk about that now. How has that changed? I think part of it, actually, I mean, I mentioned earlier that I was of that generation that grew up with Lucasfilm, with Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I think because those films explicitly tapped into spiritual themes, there were some people who said, stay away from that stuff, it's dangerous. There were other people, like myself and a lot of my friends, who actually thought, no, there's something we can engage with here. And it just sort of encouraged us to keep looking for other signs of either spiritual themes or religious themes or biblical themes. The early 80s, there were a number of films, not just Raiders of the Lost Ark, but, you also had E.T., which had its sort of alien who dies and comes back to life, and many, many people saw Christ figure in parallels in that. Or another film that I loved in the early 80s was Tron, the Disney movie about somebody who gets zapped into a computer. And in a weird way, it was kind of like a story of incarnation because, you have one of the computer programmers suddenly living among the programs, and he's living as one of them, and yet because he is as one of the programmers, he has powers that nobody else has. And so there was a weird sort of element of almost a computerized version of incarnational theology there. And so I grew up watching stuff like that, and I thought it was really fascinating. And people just became more and more media saturated as the years went by, and I guess it may have just become more acceptable. I know that in terms of the kind of attention that we pay to the media, a lot of that really blew up in a big way. And I mean blew up in the sense of blowing up a photo, that's a good thing, not like a bomb. Mm-hmm. But it really took on a whole new life of its own with the rise of the internet, because suddenly people who thought they were the only people in their communities who liked film enough to think about it suddenly started noticing other people who liked film enough to think about it, and then we all started connecting with each other online. And that just sort of enabled us to encourage each other and reinforce each other and introduce each other to things that we hadn't considered before.
Well, and the other thing that I've noticed as well is for a long time, Christians had actually sort of pulled out of the media and didn't engage in it. But now you've got this whole sort of generation of people that are saying, well, let's use the media. And you've got movies that not are just using talking about themes of faith and religious themes, but movies like Fireproof and Left Behind, some of the TV shows like The Bible and AD that are specifically made by Christians with a Christian message. What have you seen leading into that? Why has that become such a significant thing now, especially in the late 90s and early 2000s?
Well, in a lot of ways, this isn't new. I mean, I did an article a few years ago for Christianity Today on the history of Billy Graham movies, and he Worldwide Pictures was making movies going back to the 50s.
I remember some of those.
Yeah, and as I was doing my research for that article, I started looking at old Christianity Today articles from the 70s, and in the early 70s, they started a regular feature called Refiner's Fire, and it was meant to be a regular review of pop culture. And this is in the early 70s already, and practically the first article they ran was a review of a Billy Graham movie called Time to Run, and they criticized it for being too obvious with its message or too contrived in its setup.
I remember that one.
Christian film critics paying attention to the movies and criticizing independent Christian film for not being as good as it could be. I mean, that goes back decades, and in some ways, the current discussions don't seem all that new to me. If you look at it in a historical perspective, I think one thing that has made it certainly seem like a bigger deal now is the fact that, well, first of all, filmmaking techniques have democratized. It is a lot easier to make a film now than it used to be. Digital cameras, and anybody can edit a movie on their computer. We no longer have to be experts in really expensive filmmaking gear in order to make a movie. So it's a lot. I mean, like, you know, you mentioned Fireproof, and that was the third film made by those filmmakers. Their second film, Facing the Giants, and their first film, Flywheel. These were all made really on the cheap, and it was possible to do because the filmmaking technology has become very cheap. So it's a lot easier for people to make films. There's a lot more product out there, and also thanks to the internet, it's a lot easier to publicize these things and distribute them, mm-hmm. to make connections between the producer and the consumer, if you will.
And that part of that too, especially with the Flywheel and Facing the Giants and Fireproof and that, part of that was the fact that they were able to link directly to churches who they, you know, set up the whole distribution process through churches and things like that as well, and getting it directly out to the audience that they want to get.
Oh, certainly, and churches are much more receptive now to. Because churches are more receptive to the media, that means there's a lot of churches have their own media departments and things like that, and so it's easier to promote your films through them or to get the word out that way. Yeah.
Now the other thing is too is that even mainstream films, there are biblical themes that are running through that. The one that springs to my mind, of course, is Lord of the Rings, but that even that had you know, the biblical story written right into it. But even then, the Narnia Chronicles, the ones that were done, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and Prince Caspian. Why is there an interest in biblical themes and writers, people writing about them in the mainstream?
Well, there could be a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, Lord of the Rings itself, I think, is responsible for a lot of this. Lord of the Rings is made possible by developments in technology that made it possible to do a massive fantasy movie with big battle scenes and things where you know, most of the soldiers in those scenes are all created on a computer. So you don't have to have a cast of thousands. You don't have to create costumes and so forth for thousands of people to shoot the scene, like you did back in the days when you were making Spartacus or something. Now you can simply generate a lot of that on a computer, and it's more cost effective. And then of course, once Lord of the Rings turned out to be a huge hit, other studios started stepping in to make more films with an ancient setting, and not just biblical, but also, you know, Greco-Roman. So you have films like Troy or Hercules, or you know, films that look at ancient stories in general. And that explains part of the interest. There's also the fact that the Bible is public domain. And we see a lot of movies now that are based on fairy tales, and of course those are public domain as well. So studios are looking for properties that they can turn into mass entertainment, and of course the Bible is known all over the world, and it's free. You don't have to pay anybody for the rights for it. So it's one of the things they go to. Although one of the drawbacks of doing a Bible story, if you're a major studio, is that you do have to be very careful in terms of how you market the film or how you approach the story.
Oh, you mean like Noah?
Yeah, like Noah or Noah, I thought, was very expertly marketed. They were reaching out to church groups in a big way beforehand, and when controversies did arise, the controversies fed into the public's interest in the film. I think an even tougher case, a movie that had an even tougher time getting out there was Exodus, because the people behind Exodus didn't seem to be all that inclined to appeal to the church base. And yet, obviously, there was a religious element there that had to be addressed. And as it turned out, the public didn't really turn out for Exodus all that much. But with Noah, of course, when the film actually came out, then everybody saw it, and then suddenly the discussion took a whole new turn. It was really interesting to see how, before Noah came out, there were controversies because somebody had written a review of the screenplay. There were controversies over the environmental themes, which were allegedly being overhyped and so forth in the film. And then once the film actually came out, almost overnight, the controversy changed. And suddenly, nobody was really talking about environmentalism anymore. Suddenly, everybody was discussing the question of whether or not the film was Gnostic, which I don't think it was. But suddenly, overnight, that became the issue, all because there are a few scenes in the film where somebody wears a snakeskin on his arm. And there's a reason for that if you're familiar with Jewish legends, but I have to admit I wasn't familiar with the legends, and it struck me as a bit weird the first time I saw the film. But instead of going after the film and accusing it of doing something weird, I tried to figure out what they were doing first. And I actually like Noah. Some critics have called it the most Jewish of the Bible epics that have been made ever. And I actually have really enjoyed reading up on that film and its sources and learning about a lot of sort of extra-biblical Jewish legends that played a key role in shaping that film.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love to keep going on and discussing it, but we're running out of time. And in fact, we've run out of time. I just want to remind our listeners that you're going to be taking part in the Meeting God at the Movies Forum on faith and contemporary film, and that's taking place on Saturday, September 19th at Yorkminster Park Church in Toronto. And if you want details on that, go to imago-arts.org. That's imago-arts.org. Peter, thank you very much for your time tonight.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, and thank you to my guest, Peter Chataway. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at artsconnection.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@artsconnection.ca. Follow us on Twitter at @selah13. Look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook or check out the Arts Connection blog at blogdart.artsconnection.ca. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.